Train Talk Radio, episode number 5.
Live from the La Mesa Model Railroad Club, it's Train Talk Radio. I'm your host, Jared Black. Join me and my co-host, Austin McAdams, as we discuss in-depth topics related to HO-scale trains and the prototypes.
Hello, everyone, and we are once again back at the La Mesa Model Railroad Club. We want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. And there's a number of things I'd like to talk about today, but our topic today, our main topic, will include the evolution of cabooses, and we'll go into some of the details of the newer rear-end end-of-train devices.
Right.
So that will answer, hopefully, some questions that I've gotten. And I also I have a crazy story that I'd like to share. It's what happened to me yesterday. Those of you who live here in San Diego are probably familiar with Reed's Hobby Shop in La Mesa. They are one of the premier. They're actually a hobby shop that specializes almost exclusively in trains. They have a few airplanes there, but mainly trains. So I was in there the other day to get some. What was I going to get? I was looking for some track for around our Christmas tree. We use Bachmann Easy Track, and of course the stuff in the starter set. I need some switches and stuff. I can't just go with the stupid oval. So I was going over there to get some stuff. Of course, they're sold out of the switches, so, but I didn't care. The owner, Steve Bovey, is a member here at the club, and they were doing some kind of commercial or something for the store there. And they had a camera crew there, this younger kid and this older guy was like directing and stuff, and this younger kid had the camera. And I don't know if it was like some kind of commercial or it's like, I think it's like a 3-minute segment or something on some show locally broadcasted here in San Diego. But what happened was they were going around, he was talking about some of the different scales and such, you know, in front of the camera. It took him a few takes to do because they weren't rehearsed. They were just coming up with the lines right there. They didn't have cue cards or anything. So it took Steve a few takes, you know, naturally to actually say what he needed to say.
Right, you know, makes sense.
And it was interesting, though, because about halfway through what they were shooting, this guy came in with a white beard, and it turns out he was a professional Santa Claus impersonator.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know if he does it for, like, Campo or something, but all I know is he's a professional Santa Claus impersonator, and he knew Steve personally. So what they decided to do right there was he was going to come in as Santa Claus and be like, once Christmas is over, Santa Claus shops at Reed's Hobby Shop in La Mesa, California for himself.
That's a pretty good line.
Yeah, he drove home, got his Santa suit, came back about 20 minutes later. They filmed the scene. It was so funny. Hopefully I get to see it. But it turns out at the end, they were going to do like a group shot, you know, of everyone in the store. So I got to be in the end, and my line was, we'll see you at Reed's.
Oh, wow.
So I don't know how good it's going to turn out, but we'll see. But anyway, that's my story for the week. Do you have any stories?
Not really.
Yeah. How's it? Oh, what? Something's idling behind us.
It sounds like an E-unit.
Yeah. So please forgive that. We are actually in a museum, so you're going to hear sound other than our own.
Yes.
And, okay, you know, so
we've had a F-59 on the show before, too, Amtrak engine. So.
Yeah, yeah. Last, I think it was a few weeks ago, there was Travis had an Ace idling in the background. But I did buy something at Reed's yesterday. I bought a GP60M Heritage 2 157, now turned ready to run. And the cool thing was, it was in the case for $40.
Oh, wow.
And normally these units will run about $99, maybe a little more at Reed's.
And that's stock, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a used unit, and it was advertised as being a dummy unit without a motor or anything.
Right.
So I picked it up out of the case. I mean, Athern Ready runs are pretty light, so you can't really tell. I couldn't tell because I haven't handled one in a while, you know, exactly if it did have a motor just by the weight. But I turned it over. I looked, you know, in between the gas tank and the shell, and you could kind of see the little the armatures of the motor in there. So I said, this thing has a motor in it. I'm not going to tell anyone.
So it wasn't a dummy?
It wasn't a dummy.
Oh, that's weird.
Well, it wasn't technically a dummy. So I bought it for $40, took it home, And I opened it up, and it turns out, yes, there was a motor in there. And the only thing that was missing were the two little drive shafts that run from the flywheels to the truck towers.
Okay, so all you're missing is the drive shaft.
So they basically sold me a $100 locomotive for $90, or not $40 rather, but let's give some room for, you know, it was used and it was missing some parts.
But wasn't it also detailed as well?
Yeah. The other thing was I put it on my Christmas tree layout around the tree, and for some reason it wasn't working right. Like the trucks, I was just pushing it around, you know, with another locomotive. And the front truck kept derailing. So I opened it up, and I found that whoever owned it last had put a cab interior in it. And they had left some of it was interfering with the truck tower. So I kind of snipped it, you know, trimmed it so it would clear. But that's a pretty good deal. They also put windshield wipers on it. They put ditch light castings on it. They painted the handrails. They did some other things. They put MU cables and stuff on it. So that was a pretty good deal right there. And that locomotive I'm going to hopefully rebuild with some other parts, and it'll be...
you have your old one. She should be fine.
It'll be a usable locomotive here at the layout.
Yeah, and be good for switching in the yard.
Yep. So that's a pretty good deal, and let's move right along to our main topic of the day, which we are going to discuss the caboose.
Yeah, well, we had a viewer ask us to... going to death about it, so I think it's only fair we do.
Yeah. So I work at a 2-foot gauge railroad in Alpine, California.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the assistant superintendent of the Descanso Alpine and Pacific Railway. It's a little privately owned railroad that gives rides, though, on Sunday to the public. And we have a caboose up there, and a lot of people are not familiar with the use of the caboose. They associate it with always being on the end of the train. They associate it with being red. They don't really know what it was used for.
Yeah, well,
they think it's still used today.
Well, the biggest question we get is, where's the caboose? You know, when we're running our trains. And nowadays, all you see is the FRED.
Right.
Which is a flashing red and device, which is just...
And it's usually not flashing during the daytime.
No, it's only nighttime. It's pretty genius, though, because this little device that's probably like 2 feet tall at max goes under the coupler, connects to the air hose, and if there's any kind of problem in the air hose, it detects it.
Right.
And a lot of them are actually wind, you know, they're wind powered.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really handy.
Yeah. I mean, it's the thing is, with they don't understand the caboose entirely. The purpose for the caboose was in the old days, or let's say, you know, maybe, you know, 40, 50 years ago, they would have these extensive train crews that might include an engineer, a fireman, maybe two brakemen, a conductor. Now, the engineer and the fireman, they would stay in the locomotive, operate the locomotive. When they'd get to the end of the run, they'd have to go up to a boarding house or a hotel somewhere and stay. But the conductor and the brakeman could stay in the caboose in the yard during that time on the caboose
track. Well, not to mention, because you said two brakemen, because they had to actually tie individual handbrakes on the cars.
Right. And up until they got to the point where they'd have air brakes. Mm-hmm. And they'd still have, you know, maybe one brakeman or so to keep an eye on things.
Right.
But the caboose was basically an office, a living quarters, a bunk place. The conductor would have his desk in there to do his paperwork. And there'd be a cupola in it so they could look out and watch the train, the top of the train. And let's see what else. They'd also have a stove in there so they could cook on. They'd have a few bunks for people to stay in, whatever else they had. And that was basically when they'd get to the end of the run, they'd take the caboose off, put it on the caboose track. They could stay overnight, and their next assigned trip, maybe back to their originating terminal, they'd go on with the caboose. So that was the purpose of the caboose. It wasn't necessarily to carry passengers in. Some little railroads might have actually used it as a passenger car on their mixed trains.
Right.
But not on the main line.
Yeah. And, you know, it was handy, and it was used up until probably the early 90s.
Right. And the thing that was quite dangerous about the caboose was there's trains, as we all know, have a lot of slack.
Right.
Especially freight trains. And a train that's, you know, a couple, you know, maybe 100 cars long, maybe a little more. The locomotives might be going 10 miles an hour before the end of the train is even moved.
Yeah.
And once the slack hits the caboose, it really jerks. And anyone on the rear platform who's not hanging on, they could go over, they could, you know, there could be some serious problems. You know, someone up in the cupola could bang their head on the right. window. I mean, it's a dangerous car, and today's technology has made it, you know, not needed, because you need just the engineer and conductor, and they can, you know, take care of themselves.
Well, it's all computer. You know, right. like we've mentioned before, is before you had to have a crew in every engine.
Yeah.
Now, you know, one crew can control five engines by themselves or more.
Right. And it's an unnecessary, you know, part of a railroad. And basically, in the, you know, like you said, they were using them up into the, what?
90s. Yeah.
I mean, they would often be used as, like, shoving platforms.
Well, they still are today.
Yeah, they still are today, which means they're basically just a idler car that they'd use, you know, so crewmen could, you know, be out somewhere where they could easily, you know, do their they wouldn't have to be on the locomotive to do their jobs. They could be out on the end of a cut of cars, you know, radioing back to the locomotive and telling them what they need to do.
Right.
So it's not used as living quarters. It's not, you know, it's unnecessary today in today's railroading.
Well, they're occasionally used for maintenance trains.
Right.
But a lot of them have either been, you know, sold, scrapped, or just abandoned.
Yeah. You'll find them in museums and such, but for those of you who don't know it, I'm sure many of you who are listening to this, I'm preaching to the choir here, but, you know, it's not, I think I've cleared up the caboose. What you see when you see modern trains running on this layout, you won't see a caboose behind them. You'll hopefully see a Fred.
yeah.
I mean, there's some people that get away with not running a Fred, but pretend they have a Fred on the train, which is basically just a little box that's attached to the coupler. It may flash, it may not. But that's basically it. It can control, you know, the brakes from that end of the train, which means it could regulate the amount of air escaping from the train line and stuff like that. So that's a much safer. I think the Fred existed a while ago, but it did not necessarily regulate the brakes.
No,
until there was a crash. I believe it was not a crash. A runaway in Cone Pass.
Right.
A number of years ago.
In 88.
Where there was multiple, there might have been one, there might have been two, I forget, train line blockages, which means that the engineer cannot let the air escape from the train line, thus keeping the brakes off on a section of the train. And he lost control of the train. 40 miles an hour down that hill, you know, it careened off the edge, or the edge of the curve there, and that was a big, big nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
I think all but one of the crew members died. But so they figured out, you know, they could release brakes from either end. So if there happened to be a blockage in the train somewhere, you know, you could release brakes from either end of that blockage and you hopefully would have no air trapped in. Now, if there were multiple blockages and a significant part of the train was in between those two blockages, then you might have a problem.
Yeah.
Because you wouldn't have enough braking on just the end and the front to, you know, bring the train to a safe stop.
Well, that is why a lot of trains use helpers, though.
Right.
It's so, trying to prevent that. You know, if you have a crew on the end, they can provide a lot more braking power.
Right. So that's basically the idea of the Fred. It's, you know, it's as much a safety device as it is just marking the end of the train. So, you know a bit about, like, the caboose and a bit. Do you have anything else?
Well, I mean, it served the same purpose. You know, the reason why it's red in the old days was so you could see it easily. You know, because most cars were either brown, orange, or some kind of dark color.
Yeah.
Which is where the Fred came in, being flashing red.
Right.
You know, at nighttime, you see a flashing red right in front of you, you better stop.
Right. And the other thing I'd have to say is the caboose would always carry the marker lights for the train.
They had a solid red light. Mm-hmm.
You'd have, it would be a lamp that would have three green lenses and one red lens, and it could rotate. So you could put the red lens facing inward toward the car, green on all three sides, meaning that it's clear, it's not part of a train, it's just sitting, you know. Right. And then you could move the red lens toward the rear, indicating that this is the end of the train, and, you know, signifying do not move the car or whatever.
Right.
So that was the idea of the marker light, which was, you know, later replaced with the Fred and the modern devices. They'd have they still have marker lights, but they're just red red lights on the end of passenger trains, or
if even, push, even some engines.
Yeah, the push engines design, all pretty much all Amtrak engines have them.
Well, even CN engines have them as well.
Mm-hmm. They're used as, you know, to indicate the end of the train in push mode. So that's the idea behind mm-hmm. the caboose. Well, we are done with our topic, I think, pretty early.
Yeah.
So I'd just like to thank everyone who has listened to this podcast, and hopefully you can make it. It's actually Free Tuesday here at the museum, meaning that... I mean,
pretty busy.
It's pretty busy. I mean, I haven't seen it, you know, ever too busy, except for the product.
Well, yeah, that's always fun.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's basically all I have to say for today's episode. I don't know for what our next episode's going to be. We kind of, after, we kept doing it on Saturday, and right. Now it's kind of like off. We don't know
when.
Well,
you kind of have, you can't get on here, so.
Yeah.
Stay tuned.
Yep, stay tuned for our next episode. We'll see you next time.